Verdugo back to the pin. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. I'm Tom Karen. Jerry Remy will join us in just a couple of moments, along with Red Sox pitching coach Dave Busch, who's got his hands full right now, like every other manager or pitching coach in Major League Baseball, dealing with really the unknown. We're a third of the way through the season, 54 games in the books, and just about approaching the point where last season was coming to an end. So you think about the workload for pitchers. They had, even the healthy ones, were around for 60 games last year. Well, we're almost there, and there's still two-thirds of the season remaining. So it's going to be really interesting over the next two-thirds of the season how this all plays out as far as workload and health and depth of every organization. So we'll talk about all of that with Dave Busch. In his second season as a pitching coach of the Red Sox, was here last year, as difficult as that was. And we talked with him about a number of topics, beginning with the number one topic facing the Red Sox pitching staff right now. Eduardo Rodriguez, 2 years ago, finished sixth in the Cy Young Award voting with 19 wins over 200 innings. And now, for the first time in his career, has lost four consecutive decisions. The Red Sox say he's close to being back. We asked Dave Busch what it'll take to get him where he needs to be. It's Dave Busch, Red Sox pitching coach, here on the TC and Jerry podcast. Dave Busch, Red Sox pitching coach, is joining us from Houston. Dave, thanks for jumping on today.
Hey, Tom, thank you.
Let's get right to it and start with the big question for the pitching staff right now. I know we'll talk bigger picture stuff, but everybody's talking about Eduardo Rodriguez. You've got a guy with so much talent, had such a good year 2019. Then you come into this year with a complete unknown, right? Because literally didn't throw a pitch last year. What's going on with him right now? How close is he to being back to where you want him to be? And what's the process here with E-Rod?
Well, first thing is, I think he's close. You know, the last month of May was not good for him. He had a tough couple starts. I think he pitched better than the results showed. You know, there's some things that were encouraging. His velo was up. Shape of his pitches was good. The pitch quality was solid. Sometimes you run into stretches where things just don't work your way for a few starts in a row. But he had a really good April, so I know it's in there. I know he's gonna feel better. He's gonna pitch better coming up. Just sometimes you got to work through a stretch where, you know, you just don't throw the ball well and the results aren't there. But he's a fighter. He's gonna be back. He's gonna be back to being the guy that he has been in the past.
Wasn't much hard contact the other night, but there's a lot of contact. But that's kind of what Houston does, right? They're a little bit of an old school. They don't strike out much. They put the ball in play and make things happen.
You're right. They're high contact, low strikeout. You know, pretty aggressive team that puts the ball in play. And that's what they did the other day. And, you know, to their benefit, they had a lot of balls that fell in. But like I said, Eddie's going to throw well. He's going to be fine. It's just a matter of getting the results he wants and building up some confidence. But the stuff is still there, and he's going to be good for us.
Dave, Garrett Richards last night, good again. And you know, after watching the first couple of starts, it was like, oh, my God, everybody was ready to jump off the bridge. And then all of a sudden, you guys worked together. Tell me what you guys did. I mean, I believe I know it's like slowing up the delivery and get them going, you know, north and south instead of east and west. And it was those pretty much the things that you guys worked on to get them straightened out?
Yeah, there are some unique pieces to Garrett's delivery. You know, he cuts his fastball. He works around the ball a little bit, throws across his body a little bit. So with him, with a guy like that that has a long, quick arm, it's a matter of making sure all the pieces time up the right way. So we made a couple of small adjustments to the first step in his delivery, a little step back, kind of shortened that up, allowed him to stay over the rubber a little bit better. And in turn, it just kept him in line to the plate in a little more easier way that he could step back, go up and down with his leg lift, and not get so far across his body. And it worked for him, worked really well. He felt very comfortable with it. Got right back in the strike zone and allowed his stuff to play.
You spent a long time pitching in the majors. And when you got a guy like Richards, who's got that experience, but I don't want to say lost, but that first outing, right, the first few innings, you're wondering where is he at. And you guys put so much work in between his starts. Is that unusual, especially at the beginning of the year when everybody else is trying to get going? But for a veteran like that to put in as much work, kind of, you know, I know you talked a lot about gathering over the mound. It wasn't reinventing himself, but it really was doing some pretty heavy work between starts there, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was frustrated, probably a little bit embarrassed by the way he pitched first couple starts, and he knew he had to be better. So he was willing to do whatever it took. And we looked at all the stuff we have. We pulled up some video. We looked at his pitch data, looked at some old video from him when he was with the Angels, and just, you know, identified some things that we thought he might be able to do differently. And he saw some of the same stuff. And we took a rep down to the bullpen mound and said, look, man, this is what you got to do. We got to find a way to get on time. We got to find a way to clean up the delivery. And he was willing to do it. And he worked really hard at it quickly and saw the results right away and stuck with it since then.
Dave, same question. We had Tim Hires on last week, and I was asking him about, you know, guys, when guys are struggling, and everybody struggles. I mean, everybody goes through tough times, and some people adapt to it better than others. And I've always said that the toughest job for coaches is the mental part of the game. You know, I mean, physically, you identify the mistakes that they're making, you try to correct them, but to get into their head and to see exactly where they are, that's got to be a very difficult thing. And to convince people, you know, that look, this is the right way to go. And they get a lot of outside noise from other people, from other players, from other, you know, and it's got to be difficult for you to get them circled back in to one thing and say, hey, let's go with this. Let's focus on this. This is what's going to work.
You're right. The relationship part matters. A lot of time, especially early in spring training, a lot of time goes into just getting to know guys. Each guy works differently. Each guy has different things that motivate him and make him tick. So the time I spend building the relationships, getting to know what a guy is like on and off the field, just understanding their personalities so that when we do have issues like this that we have to work on the field, we already have a foundation between each other. We have an understanding of how, you know, I try to know how they work, what words matter to them. Some guys need to be pushed. Some guys need a softer hand. You know, it's different with each guy and different each day. So I think a lot of that foundational work is laid ahead of time so that when there is trouble on the field, we do have things that we need to work on, whether it's between starts or even in a game, that there's a trust and a relationship built up so that I can say what I need to say. And they believe that whatever advice I am giving them, I truly believe it's going to help them. And then they have the confidence to take it right out there and make it work.
Last year, your first year as a major league pitching coach, you're trying to build some of those relationships with a guy who's up in his individual suite, right? Or a guy, I mean, with the COVID and everything that was going on, I can't imagine trying to create some relationships, especially guys who weren't there in spring training, guys who were kind of Nick Pivetta, right? Who comes in after all of that is locked down. How challenging was it for you? And in a strange way, do you think that made you stronger and better as a coach coming into this year because everything you went through last year?
Yeah, look, in a difficult year in 2020, that was probably the hardest thing we had to deal with, was that the separation of players and staff and the inability to be around each other and just to get to know each other. I guess it's one of the things we took for granted in the past, just being around the clubhouse and around the coaches' offices, that those relationships get built casually. And we didn't have that last year with the players in different parts of the stadium and the coaches all spread around. And even off the field at the hotels, we were all separate all the time. So it was tough. And we had a revolving door on the pitching staff last year, too. There are new guys coming up and down all the time. It was very challenging. I learned a lot about how to try to communicate and things that I could do better to make sure I build those relationships with guys. But very grateful this year that we're back in a more normal setting, that even though we have some COVID protocols we have to follow, the players are in the clubhouse. We're around them more. The relationships feel normal. The time we spend together is much more typical. And I think we've all really benefited from that.
They ever want to go out to the bullpen for just a second. And Matt Barnes, I mean, this is by far the best we have ever seen him in a Red Sox uniform. And, you know, he's always had the great stuff, the great fastball, the great curveball. But it's almost like he at times he would nibble around, fall behind in counts. You know, now he's getting ahead of counts. He's making people look absolutely silly. I mean, that had to be pounded into him from the first day of spring training.
Yeah, it actually started before then. It started over the winter with presenting him some data about how his fastball is just as productive and just as good as his curveball is. In the past, Matt's, you know, fallen into the trap of only trusting his curveball. And we had some numbers that showed that the production on his fastball was the same as on his curveball. Yeah. And my point to him over the winter was you can throw either pitch whenever you want to in the strike zone because both of them perform equally well. So we started there over the winter and let it seep in for a little bit. And then come spring training, we had a lot more information that we presented to the group as a whole about how the league performs in certain counts and certain situations. And I think it just reinforced to Matt that his stuff is good enough. All his stuff is good enough that he can throw strikes with any pitch in any count against any hitter and the production is going to be there. And he's gone out in the field and done it. To his credit, he's gone out there and done it and proved that it's true. And the confidence he has now is great, and he's willing to throw strikes and pound the zone all the time, fastball and curveball, and he's become very, very good.
When you talk about the bullpen, right now we've seen different guys stepping into those seventh, eighth inning, higher leverage roles. And it seems, you know, every bullpen goes through this, right? The fluidity of sort of those guys. And I guess it's, first of all, nice here that you've got a guy who's taken that ninth inning role and locked that down so you can work on those other innings. But take us through that process, because I don't want to say it's auditioning, but, you know, you have guys who suddenly grab the opportunity and will take it, and then maybe things slip up someone else. I mean, how difficult is it to try to match the guy with the role while you're on the fly here?
Yeah, it's tough. That's how bullpens work. Some teams have established seventh, eighth, ninth inning guys that they're going to go to with the lead every time. Not everyone has that luxury, and we don't this year, but going into it, we knew we had a couple guys in Ottavino and Barnes that had experience at the back end of the game, and we're willing to let either one of them pitch the ninth inning. You know, Matt has taken that role and run with it, but Otto's done a great job setting him up. He's become a very solid eighth inning guy. And now leading into that, we've had a couple different guys that have pitched sixth and seventh innings in kind of critical situations. But that's part of being a bullpen guy, is figuring out what your matchups are and what part of the lineup you can handle, whether you do better against lefties or righties, or whether you can handle both. So we've had some guys that have stepped up lately. Josh Taylor's been throwing the ball really well. Saul Murray's been pitching really well also lately. Just a matter of figuring out, you know, what roles guys can handle and how our bullpen lines up the best. You know, in our case, it's not as simple as just putting one guy out there each inning. But oftentimes we're looking through the opposing lineup and trying to find pockets of hitters where we think the matchups work in our favor.
Saul Moore is interesting to me because there's a lot of guys that throw the split finger fastball, but I mean, he throws it hard. I couldn't believe the first couple of times I saw it. I think we had him on the gun one time I was doing a game at something like 94 with a split. I don't think I've ever seen that before, you know? So, I mean, it's pretty amazing what he's capable of doing.
He has really good stuff. That's one of the things that intrigued us when we decided to bring him over here from Japan, was we thought the stuff would play against big league hitters. And it does. He, like you said, he has a good hard split. He's got a fastball that rides through the zone. When he throws strikes and when he attacks the hitters, his stuff is really, really good. That's probably the consistency piece that's been missing from time to time, is just the willingness and ability to throw strike one to each hitter. Because when he's ahead in the count with his fastball velo and the depth on the split, he does not get hit very hard when he's ahead in the count.
You talk about the information that's available now, and you started, when you made your major league debut in 2004, that information was not readily available. Were you a guy when you pitched who sought that out, and how different is it now as far as the acceptance? I feel everybody accepts the information now. It's just part of the game, but you kind of, you know, from pitching to coaching to working in this industry, your career kind of arcs the beginning of the whole thing. Were you a guy who sought it out as a pitcher?
I was, but in a different way, because back then we had mostly just video to look at. There were some kind of the beginning of some of those, stat companies that were producing information for us, but it wasn't readily available. Not everyone was using it. So early on, it was mostly through video work where you just watch, clip after clip after clip to try to pick up trends, to learn how hitters swung, to see what their results were. And then after that, as the information became more readily available, we started integrating it more. And it, like you said, it really changed throughout my career. And then it's changed really fast as I've gotten back into it as a coach. The information is everywhere and it's very detailed. And instead of having to seek it out, now we have to try to simplify it. It's all there. There's packets and packets of information available to us every day. And it becomes too much at some point. So we have to know exactly what we're looking for and what's useful and try to whittle it down and simplify it in a way that the players can actually use.
I know nothing Jerry loves more than, calling a game when a guy's looking inside his hat. But is it, you talk about that, the sheer volume of information in literally every aspect of the game right now. And you just said this, but how difficult is it? And I know you have to tailor it for each guy, right? So now you're talking about 14 guys who probably process information differently. How challenging is that to a coaching staff? To you and Kevin, obviously, who work so closely with the pitchers, to make sure that you're taking that volume of information, streaming it down, and then tailoring it to each individual guy.
Yeah, I mean, you got it. That's the challenge with information and doing advanced reports is, getting it simplified to a way that everyone understands it, but then also being able to send it out to a way that each pitcher understands it differently. You know, like we can do a scouting report about an opposing hitter, but not all of my pitchers pitch the same way. They all have different stuff. Their fastballs move differently. They have different off-speed pitches. So part of it is providing the information about the opposing player. Another part is making sure that each of our guys understands what kind of pitcher they are and how their stuff plays. That we can provide them with a ton of information, but if they're not applying it to themselves the right way, it's not going to be very helpful. So it's educating them about themselves, also about the opposing players, and then making sure when they're out in the mound that they have the confidence to trust their stuff and know that their stuff is good enough no matter what the hitter is, no matter what the game situation is. But that is, it's a challenging part of today's game with all the information. And also on TV too, like anyone watching the game on TV sees StatCast info as it's happening. And so we're trying to get away from some of that too and make sure the guys can simplify it on the mound and just stay focused on what they do best.
You know, I've got a question about, it used to be in the old days, let's get to the bullpen. It's no longer let's get to the bullpen. I mean, the game is just completely flip-flopped. It's totally flip-flopped from starters to relievers. And you got these guys coming in now, you know, throwing 90, you know, high 90s consistently over and over and over again. Good example, I mean, all the numbers in baseball offensively are down, way down this year. You know, strikeouts are up. I mean, how did this progress to this point, you know, where you're getting these power arms out of the bullpen? Was this a strategy that baseball had, you know, to change the game and get these guys, these high throwers out in the bullpen? Or did is it because they're in better shape than other guys were in years past? They've been stronger. Their workout routines are better. It just amazes me how many guys come out of the bullpen now and throw that with that kind of velocity.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on a bunch of things there. The first one I'll say is that baseball is a competitive sport. Teams want to win. And we're always looking for any way, any place we can find a small advantage. And I think teams started by looking at the middle of the game, fifth, sixth, seventh inning, when your starter's getting fatigued, he's up around 100 pitches, and you're starting to look at your bullpen options. And in the past, those kind of middle relievers, you know, typically weren't that good, or they were fringe big league guys, and so we would stick with our starter.
Right.
But then people started realizing that, all right, if we can develop some guys that throw a little bit harder, we have some better training methods, that the higher velo starts to play there. And even if a guy doesn't have a great secondary pitch, or even if he's not an established reliever, when a starter is getting late in his game, might be a better option to go to the bullpen earlier. So we found, you know, some teams found success with that. Training methods and our shoulder strengthening is so much better, and guys started throwing harder. And then all of a sudden you look around, it's like, all right, some of these guys that weren't good enough to be starters and weren't good enough to be back end relievers, they actually do have a very effective, productive role in the middle of the game. And that's how it kind of evolved. And, you know, teams started to find that they had success that way. But the game has definitely changed. We do things differently than we did 5, 10, 15 years ago. It may evolve back into something different here coming up. But for right now, that's the way to have success on the mound, is to have guys that throw harder, to bring in new relievers each time through the order. That's what works. And we want to win. That's the bottom line, is we want to win. So we're going to find the best way we can do it.
We're a third of the way through the season, and we're starting to see some data now that the deadened ball, the lightened ball, whatever they did to the ball, isn't just maybe keeping it in a couple feet, right? Which are a couple inches, which is what we thought originally, but maybe it has an effect on pitchers. Maybe there's more spin. Maybe I know that you're deep in the weeds, probably not sitting back looking at a lot of baseball data, if you will, but have you seen that on the field level? Do you think what they did to the baseball could have had an effect on pitching success right now?
It seems like it. I don't have the data to prove that, but it does seem like it. It does seem like the ball is not traveling quite as far. How that translates to spin, I don't know. I don't know if there's an effect on the way the ball is spinning and the way it's moving. But it certainly does seem like early in the year, the ball is not carrying as far as it did last year. I know last year was difficult because the season started late. We're in the middle of the summer and warmer weather. But again, anecdotally, it does feel like the ball is not carrying as far as it used to.
And just to follow up on what Jerry said about bullpens, I would have bet the house a few years ago we'd hardly ever see no hitters anymore because you're going to go to the bullpen so quick. Instead, we get one every week. And you took, what, 3 no hitters into the 8th? Is that right?
Yes. Yep.
What is that like? Again, you didn't get it all the way through, but at, you know, for you, I know everybody handles it differently. Some guys want blinders. They don't want to think about it. I know you have said that you knew exactly the number of outs and what was left and that you tracked all that. What's it like once you get past the fifth, sixth inning to know that that's in play?
Yeah. I mean, those games, they stick in my mind as games where everything just worked right. I could tell from the first pitch that the ball was going exactly where I wanted it to. I had command all my pitches. I was mentally locked in. Some of those days you just kind of roll with it, kind of black out and just go, and everything works exactly the way you want it to. But like you said, I mean, the way I pitched, I knew everything was going on. I could recall every pitch I'd thrown and every hit that had happened throughout a game. So the days where I had no hitters going late to the game, I knew, like I said, I knew the situation. I knew what was going on. I knew what I was up against. And really, I just enjoyed those games. I remember those games being so much fun because everything was working right for me. I could do whatever I wanted to. And just the competition, the challenge of trying to take a no-hitter late in the game was really, really fun for me.
Well, I'm really glad that we're able to see you without a mask on, because for 2 years we've had you on TV and nobody knows what you look like around here.
Yeah, it's you know, I've had a couple people say that the challenge of COVID baseball is having to wear a mask all the time. Although I will say the one benefit is when I go out to the mound, they don't have to cover my face. So, you know, the practice at some point when we don't have to wear masks anymore, I will have to practice putting my hand up over my mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be the one benefit I found of all this.
You know, one thing for all the talk of what you've done with the one thing that sort of seems to be overarching with this group is the tempo, right? You've is that a philosophy thing? Is that just in general, you think working quicker is better for the pitcher? I know, it, again, tailor it to the individual, but in general, you seem to have these guys working at a quicker pace. Was that by design?
I do. I think it matters. Yep. I think there's a confidence and competitiveness that comes from catching the ball, getting the ball back from the catcher, stepping up on the mound, and being ready to make the pitch right away. I want the pitchers to stay in control. I want them to feel like they're in control of the situation and they can dictate what's going to happen. And that starts by getting back up on the rubber and making the hitter feel uncomfortable. You know, hitters don't like getting in the box and looking out and having the pitcher ready to go. Hitters want to take their time. They want to dig in. They want to do whatever they do. So I want the pitchers to have the ball back, to be on the rubber, ready to make their pitch and then, you know, do it and dictate the tempo and the pace of the game.
I think that's great. And, you know, you're exactly right, because, you know, as a former hitter, I mean, you knew those guys were ready to go and they wanted to attack, you know, and there was a time when, you know, even the offensive players, they took one foot out of the box and back in because they knew they were not going to wait for them. You know, it was just going to go. And it made you very uncomfortable. You didn't have time to think everything out. And I think it's a huge advantage. And that's why I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm a little bit for the clock, only because I think that, you know, pitchers that say that well, they don't want a clock. I think if they really got to that point where they were working under that kind of an atmosphere, I think they would enjoy it more. I really do. You know, you know, David Price, an example for, you know, he took forever. But the fact of the matter is, I think that if he would have been under a clock and had to force himself to make a pitch in, say, 20 seconds, I think he would have enjoyed it more. Because sometimes I think guys just outthink themselves on the mound.
Yeah, you're right. I'm certainly not against the clock. I like the quick pace. I like the tempo. I think it works to the benefit of the pitchers and really the game overall, for it to be crisp and clean and for guys to be moving all the time. And if that starts with the pitcher getting on the rubber faster and making his pitch, then I'm all for it. I like the pace of the game when it moves that way.
Yeah. And
from
an offensive side, I mean, also it's got to work two ways. I mean, they can't allow hitters to be going strolling every time listening to their music. You know, they've got to allow, I mean, one foot out of the box and that's it, and get back in. If you're not back in, it's a strike. I mean, it's the way it's got to be. I mean, I watch the game and it's like these guys go for walks like every single pitch. And as a pitcher, that would drive me absolutely crazy if I'm trying to work a good game and I want to keep my, you know, my pace up. And it's like, you know, and then they go, oh, my bad. Well, you know, when you call a timeout, my bad. No kidding that you're bad. You know, I mean, who else bad is it? It's like, you're the one I call timeout. It just cracks me up. You know, I mean, get in the box.
Yeah, I hear you, Jerry. Like I said, I like the crisp game. I like the pace to be picked up a little bit. And I think it's better baseball that way.
Okay, but that said, I've never seen a guy like Nick Pivetta. I mean, I'm waiting. At some point this year, I'm waiting for him to barehand the ball from the catcher and just throw it back as his next pitch. Are there times, I mean, Jerry's joked about this on the air, a couple of times we've seen where maybe he walks two guys in a row. Do you almost have to get him to take a breath and slow it down a little?
I do. It happened the other day when he pitched last week. I had to tell him between innings that I thought he was going a little bit too fast. You know, there's a sweet spot where you work with a pace and with a good tempo, and then you can definitely be too fast where and really it's a mental pace at that point. It's that the mind's going so fast that he's not giving himself a second to think about what he wants to throw. And about the middle of the game last time, he kind of settled in. He still worked fast, but he had a little calmer movements to him where you could tell that he was had thought through what he wanted to throw. And then when he stepped in the rubber, he was confident and ready to go rather than just having to go super fast. But yeah, there's definitely a sweet spot in the middle there where it's not too fast, but it's fast enough.
He's been something. I mean, it's from when you first got to see him last year after the trade to where he is now, what has he done that that's impressed you the most?
A lot. He's grown a lot. You know, the stuff is there. The stuff was there before. There was no doubt about that. But part of it for him was just being able to put the big picture together to understand what kind of pitcher he was or he is, to have the confidence in his stuff, to start to learn what it means to pitch. Not just to throw his stuff over the plate, but to actually pitch and link his pitches together to understand where it plays in the zone, what the hitter's doing, how they're reacting pitch to pitch. And then also just to learn how to pitch deep into a game. You know, he'd been a starter, he'd been in the bullpen. I think he never totally felt comfortable at either one. And we gave him a chance to start. We put him out there and told him he was going to be a starter and we're going to let him go for a little bit. And that really helped his confidence. It helped him to just trust his stuff that we believed in him. He's gone out there and proved it. And each time out, he works very hard between starts. He goes out there and competes really well when he's on the mound. And he's letting his stuff play. And he's learning along the way. He's getting better and better each time out. And it's been fun to watch because I think he's unlocking his potential. He's having success. And that's really what I like, what I enjoy the most about it.
Before I let you go, Chris Sale, I mean, if you want to give us an actual date, you know, that's fine. It's just the three of us. If you want to tell us when he might be back in Boston, that'd be great.
Chris is on the way. I don't know what the date's going to be, but he's throwing off the mound. And it's more than just a handful of pitches. He's on the mound doing a buildup like we would see, you know, early on in spring training. Exactly what the timetable is, I don't know right now, but I do feel good about what he's doing, that he's getting on the mound consistently. He's throwing his pitches. He's going to start working into his off-speed pitches soon. He's taking all the steps. He's doing things the right way, and we are going to get him back. Like I said, I don't know exactly when, but when we do get him back, he's going to be ready to go and to be himself again.
And then before this is the moment that Jerry can roll his eyes, but I got to give you a moment to talk about the great state of Maine, a state that means so much to both of us. Jerry, you can just take off your video for a minute if you
Dave,
like.
Dave, do you know that TC is in the Hall of Fame?
I'm about to be. Not yet. No. The induction ceremony is September.
Where's my invitation?
It's coming in the mail. You have a game that day.
No, that's
okay. I got an excused absence. Honored. Maine State, Maine Sports Hall of Fame. But how, you know, you went there as a kid, right? That's how it started? You guys used to go up to Bridgeton?
Yep. Yeah, I spent time in Bridgeton, Maine in the summertime as a kid, really from the time I was very little all the way through, and always liked it up there. And when I started playing, I made my offseason home in Bridgeton. And we can be anywhere in the offseason. And it was a place I liked, a place that was special to me. And, I got married and settled in up there. And been up in Maine ever since. So, you know, it's a place that means a lot to me. I'm very comfortable up there. I love the people and the outdoors and everything it has to offer. It's nice to be a couple hours from Boston. It allows me to get home on some off days. It allows my family to come down to Boston a decent amount. But it's a great place. I really do love it up there.
So you got to respect, guy. Anybody can go like live in Naples, Florida in the off season. You got, you know, like Matt Stairs used to go live in Old Town and coach a hockey team. Like that's a character guy. You choose Maine for the off season. You know, that's taken the hard way, but it's a great town. It's a great place. You don't get up there in the summer at all, do you though?
No. I will say that was one benefit last year with the shutdown is I got to spend the first half of the summer in Maine and do the lake life again in a way I hadn't expected to. But it is. It's a beautiful place. My family loves it up there, and we'll be there for a long time.
And then we also got to give you kudos for rocking the Nesson wear. Can you show the Nesson logo? See, that's good product placement right there.
Yep. He's got
the
Nesson shirt. Smart guys.
Okay, so we're wrapping up here on this. I want to ask you this, and it's not a quick one, but I will ask you. Because of the unknown last year, the innings, you know, you tend to base things off what a guy did the year before. Guys didn't do anything last year, right? Even the guys who did pitch their 60, games worth of stuff. How much uncertainty is there for you the second half? How different will it be for us watching? How important is depth going to be as maybe guys hit walls here? What do you expect to happen over the second half of the year?
Don't know what's going to happen. We're thinking about a lot of those things. We're at the point right now, we're almost 60 games in. We're right about the limit for what the guys that were healthy last year, right about the limit for what they threw. You know, 60, 70 innings, 10 or so start, 10 or 12 starts. We're there right now. Up to this point, all our guys have stayed healthy. Part of that's by design. You know, early on, we kept the leash a little bit shorter. Whenever we've had an off day or even two off days like last week or including the rainout, we had three, we've pushed everyone back and given them extra rest between starts. We feel like it's important for their health long-term to make sure at this point in the year we can give them the extra rest. But we're going to have to monitor it all year. I don't know what to expect. We got guys that made 10 starts and threw 60 or 70 innings last year. We have guys like Eduardo that threw zero. We have guys like Nick Pivetta that made some starts, but also was in the bullpen a little bit and then was at the alt site some last year. So there's a mix of guys with different backgrounds from last year. I don't know what to expect. We're trying to monitor everything the best we can. We're trying to give them extra rest whenever we can. But our depth is going to be tested at some point. We're going to have to dip into the minor leagues and get some more starters, and we'll see how we handle it. But the most important thing right now is keeping our guys healthy, trying to get them on the mound every 5, 6, 7 days, whenever their turn comes up, and trusting that they can go out there and pitch. But it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for us and everyone else in baseball.
I think it's going to be intriguing because every team's doing it, like you said. Dave, we really appreciate it. It was great to dig in. We don't get to see you at the ballpark, so we appreciate the time chatting here.
Yeah, thank you. It was great.
All right, that's Dave Bush, Red Sox pitching coach. And, of course, Jerry Remy, Red Sox Hall of Famer, which is a much bigger deal than being a main sports Hall of Famer. This was the TC and Jerry podcast. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.